SBS Radio.
Wadamali and welcome to NITV Radio. I'm Kerry Lee Harding and it's that time of the week again where we check in and yarn all things science and technology with STEM journalist Ray Johnston. Welcome to the program, Ray.
Oh, thanks for having me back again, sis.
Deadly to have you back as we do each week on our program. Now we're going to firstly start off by talking about that very deadly thunderstorm Asthma, which happened in Melbourne back in 2016. Sis, what can you tell us about this story and what do we know now?
Yeah, it was deadly and not in the good way. It was 10 people died in that storm, which was really devastating. And heaps more needed to call for medical assistance as well. We now know that it was the world's most severe thunderstorm asthma event to ever occur anywhere. So researchers from the CSIRO and the University of Melbourne and the Bureau of Meteorology, as well as the University of Tasmania and the Environment Protection Authority, they've all worked together to look at what could have caused it. And it happened at the peak of the pollen season. And something in that storm was breaking up the pollen. But it's not likely to have been the water, which is what everyone previously thought. They thought it was the raindrops itself that was breaking up the pollen. Instead, it looks like lightning may have played a major role in it. And the researchers looked at friction that was happening in the storm from things like the water and wind gusts and the lightning strikes. And they say that everything probably worked in tandem with each other, but the lightning strikes were the only thing that created a pattern of broken up pollen that followed the path of the storm. And that path also matches the information of where emergency calls for ambulances were coming from after the storm as well. So they were able to look at that information as well. And they've worked out it was the lightning. The lightning was breaking up that pollen during the storm. And this is, you know, really good information to know just in case there is another thunderstorm that does occur during pollen season like this in the future, that, you know, perhaps emergency services can get ready to be treating people for asthma where those lightning strikes have been.
Such an important story to yarn about today. And you take me back to that very day. I was actually down at St Kilda Beach and it was just before the asthma storm had hit Melbourne. But people had kind of packed up all over the beach and gone home. And there was myself and my partner just almost there alone on St Kilda Beach just before the deadly thunderstorm came through. It was quite a bizarre and surreal experience, sis.
Yeah, I can imagine it was terrifying. Yeah, absolutely.
A very sad day for Melburnians indeed. Now we go from that very serious topic, talking about that deadly thunderstorm in Melbourne, which caused many deadly asthma attacks back in 2016. And we go to talking about sunlight and how it can solve the world's clean water crisis. How so, sis?
Yeah, this is a really interesting one. So researchers at the University of South Australia, they've developed a cheap way that can deliver safe drinking water to millions of people using sustainable materials and sunlight. And less than 3% of the world's water is fresh water, which is just an amazing statistic. And because of the pressures of climate change and pollution and population patterns in many areas, you know, this already scarce resource is becoming even more scarce and it's becoming really difficult for people to access clean water. So at the moment, we've got 1.42 billion people, and that includes 250 million children that live in areas of high water vulnerability. And that figure is expected to grow. So that's just a bit of background as to why this kind of technology is important to develop. So this team at the University of South Australia, they've worked out a better way to get fresh water from seawater and brackish water or contaminated water through solar evaporation. So it can deliver enough daily fresh drinking water for a family of four from 1 square metre of water that you normally wouldn't be able to drink. And there's been a lot of attention using solar evaporation in recent years, but other technology that's existed to do this it hasn't really been very efficient. It's been using up massive amounts of wastewater and not really delivering a whole lot of fresh water at the end of the day. So these researchers have looked at how the energy loss part of the process can be reduced, because that's what's happening there. That's why it's not efficient. It's losing its energy. And they've worked out a technique that not only prevents the loss of solar energy, of that energy loss, but it also draws additional energy from the water and the surrounding environment. So this system is operating at 100% efficiency for the solar output, and it draws up another 170% of energy from the water and the environment. So in all, bottom line, the too long didn't read version of that story is that these awesome researchers down in South Australia are working out ways to get fresh drinking water out of water that we definitely couldn't drink before, and they're doing it better than anyone else in the world has been able to do. So hopefully it can solve a pretty big problem.
What a good news story to hear on our science and technology segment this week, Sis. Now we go to a story which takes me back to my childhood. And you're going to tell me about vehicles that can actually propel themselves along the water and self-navigate around any object in their path. This can soon be a reality. And I'll tell you why, Sis, that I'm taken back to my childhood here. There was an actual, like an SUV style vehicle that would actually drive on land and then drive into the lake in the small country town in which I grew up in. And I just remember being absolutely just like I was in a Bond film or something. It was very bizarre, especially for back then.
Cool. I remember those.
Yes.
I remember them really well. And yeah, this research is really exciting as well. This is out of the Australian National University, this study, and it builds on what is known as the Magnus effect. And the Magnus effect is a force that acts on spinning objects. So we mostly know the Magnus effect from sport. So for example, when tennis players use topspin or backspin to control the direction of the ball, that's called the Magnus effect. And the idea of using this force to propel vehicles along the surface of the water, it was originally used in rotor ships, where large rotors are mounted on the vessel, on the boat, and driven by the engine, pushing the ship sideways against the wind. It kind of acts like a sail. But these researchers were interested in what happens when there's no wind. So they studied these really super fast spinning discs on the water surface. And they found that when the discs reached a certain speed, when they got really fast, they started self-propelling. So they didn't need any engine, they didn't need any fuel, nothing behind it to keep going. And when that disc approaches a boundary, like a wall, something solid, it stops speeding up and it travels at a constant speed along that wall, no matter what shape it is. So this discovery, it opens the door for autonomous water vehicles and marine robots. So think of like a robot vacuum cleaner, that kind of robot, but on top of the water.
Wow, okay.
Spinning its way around. And as long as you've got some type of, you know, guidance for it to travel inside, you can get it to go wherever you want it to without having to drive it. I just think stuff like this is really cool. So, yeah, we could get into a no motor, no fuel, you know, no driver version of that boat that you had a go on.
Yeah, absolutely, Sis.
Imagine that.
Too much fun indeed. Now, quite a sad story to end on in our science and technology segment this week. Apparently, there's a call out to cut your old hair ties. Apparently, platypus have been found to be tangled in hair ties, plastic rings, and even hospital wristbands. Is this right, Sis?
Yeah, it is. So everyone is being encouraged at the moment to make sure that you're cutting through any loops or rings of any size before putting them in the rubbish, because a new study has found platypus in Victoria in particular have become tangled in all sorts of items that we've been putting in the bin.
Aww.
And, yeah, they've found a whole lot of items that have been recovered from rescued animals and animals that have unfortunately passed that did include elastic hair ties, fishing line, that hospital wristband. There was an engine gasket, one of those plastic ring seals from a food jar. So things that you normally wouldn't think as being a risk. All of these items had sadly cut through the skin of these animals and in some cases caused fatal injuries. So it's really devastating. You know, the researchers are estimating that up to 1.5% of the platypus that are living in the greater Melbourne area and 0.5% of those living in regional Victoria are at risk of those kinds of injuries or deaths from those injuries at any point in time. So we want to protect our platypus. We want to keep them safe. If you've got anything that the platypus might get tangled in, go in your rubbish, make sure you cut it up so that it can't happen.
Good advice to give us, Mob. As we come to an end for this week, Ray Johnston, STEM journalist, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the program to talk all things science and technology, as we do each week. Thanks, Sis.
Anytime.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.